was the other time besides the siege on the White House? Freddie, someone who's going to have all the details for you is our U.S. foreign policy expert and associate editor at the Daily Maverick. That's Brooks Spector. Brooks, it was what, a year ago when we were going through an impeachment process for the President Donald Trump? Do you want to share some of the highlights as to why he was impeached the first time around?
Yeah, good morning. And interesting question from your listener. It was about 13 months ago, actually, and that was a direct result of the strong-arm tactics and pressure on the new Ukrainian president to issue a quid pro quo, you know, a one hand washes the other kind of arrangement. It will release the money for defensive weapons if you do the skullduggery to prove that my likely opponent, Joe Biden, and his family had done dirty dealings in the Ukraine in terms of business relationships. And that vote went for an impeachment, that is effectively an indictment, but it did not pass in the Senate for a conviction. The odds are now that he has been impeached time number two, and the Senate, at least by the nose counters who are doing their work now, it's not clear that the Senate would vote for conviction again. And as you undoubtedly can tell if you look at the calendar, it's not absolutely clear that it would happen before the president's term of office runs out.
In fact, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying that there's no way that he'll be able to have this trial before the 19th of January or the 20th of January when the inauguration takes place, which means that it's only going to happen after Joe Biden has been inaugurated as the next president of the United States. And Joe Biden in his statement, in fact, pleading that this trial does not take away all the time from the work that is desperately needed to be done. There's a coronavirus pandemic that America has been rubbish at responding to, an economic stimulus package that needs to be passed in order, of course, for the economy to be revived as much as possible.
Yeah, no, and the problem is, of course, that some people argue, some senators argue, that the Senate is really only capable of taking up one major thing at a time and everything else goes into pause mode until they get that thing either done or dealt with or not dealt with, as the case may be, and then move on to the next. And I think Biden is making the point that we actually have other business besides retribution against Donald Trump, and not the least of which is, as you've enumerated, the COVID pandemic and the economic malaise. And those will require action from the Senate, and the Senate will have to focus on those in an intense kind of way. The point that some people are reminding us, though, about a Senate conviction is that there would be effectively two parts to it. One is the conviction itself, and then the second would be the stipulation that the convicted individual is disqualified forever from holding federal office again. And that would obviously preclude the president, the current president, from running for a second term in 2024.
Which is the whole point of them going ahead with this trial, right? Because many would argue, well, if he's out of office by the 20th of January, why bother with a Senate trial? It is so that if he is found guilty, because process dictates, the House of Representatives will vote that an impeachment trial needs to go ahead. That those articles are then taken to the Senate. The Senate needs to hear the legal arguments and then vote accordingly, because it's only the Senate that, should Donald Trump's trial have gone ahead before the 20th, it's only the Senate that can remove a sitting president, is my understanding, at least in this process. But if it goes ahead, it will mean that Donald Trump possibly could never stand for any federal leadership contest anywhere in America ever again.
That's my point. The thing about this is that when he is impeached, that's effectively the equivalent in legal court terms of being indicted, and convicted by the Senate is in effect the same thing as a judge, or in America, judge and jury, reaching the verdict that a person is guilty. The Trump presidency has been bedeviled by both of these trials, and he now, of course, gets two asterisks after his name in the history books, president at the bottom, impeached twice. And that is a unique moniker, and it's probably not something most people would have appreciated getting. What it does is it sets up also within the Republican Party a division between those who supported cashiering the president and those who didn't, and that will play out in primary elections in the year 2022 in the case of members of the House of Representatives, and perhaps in 2024 as well when the presidential nomination process kicks in all over again for the next term. So it is likely, I mean, who knows the future, but it is likely to keep this issue on the boil for years within the Republican Party, let alone within the country. The difference between the previous impeachment and this one is crucial in that the previous one required all kinds of witnesses to deal with the details of what constituted the effect of that phone call and related actions to the president of Ukraine. This time around, of course, the president's own statements are all in the public record and his actions are all in the public record with regard to inciting the mob that went and tried to seize the Capitol building. None of that was secret. There are no messages. There are no hidden bits of information. There are no phone calls that must be revealed, no meetings that have to be the minutes of which have to be brought out. It's all right there in the public record. We all saw it. We watched TV. We saw it in front of us.
It's going to be very difficult for those Republican senators who would vote against a guilty verdict, to use a popular term, given the evidence that's all in play. But as you say, there are midterms and another cycle in 4 years' time to worry about. And he still enjoys a very big sort of 70 million people plus voted for him in the last election. And I imagine those elected representatives will want to have access to those potential voter base. Brooks, here's a question from Eunice in Killarney. Eunice, good morning. What's your question for Brooks?
Yeah, hi there. My question to Brooks is, Brooks, look, the incoming president is Joe Biden. What is the procedure in terms of the rash decisions, some of them, for example, that the Trump administration has taken? For example, putting Cuba back onto the terror list. I mean, like the Western Sahara story, that was a United Nations resolution that had been passed, an Iran nuclear deal. Now, if the new incoming president has to undo all this, how long does it take to undo these sort of these rash decisions and the time frame, please, if you could answer that?
Eunice, thank you very much for your question. Brooks, the incoming president has already indicated that he'll get America back on the Paris Climate Change Agreement, for example, I think there'll be continued funding for World Health Organization, which Donald Trump had decided to pull some money away from.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and it's one that that's occupying a lot of minds, and I spent a little time focusing on it as well. I think the real difference within that question will be those actions which were done pursuant to a presidential proclamation or decision, the Paris Climate Accord can be reversed simply by an executive order, a statement by the president that the United States wishes to accede to the accord all over again, because it wasn't a treaty, it was simply a statement of affiliation. The more difficult ones would be though any decisions that were made pursuant to changes in government regulations. That would mean a whole series of steps to get the regulations rewritten. You wouldn't simply just say, all right, regulation X, Y, and Z are superseded. We go back to where we were 2 years ago. It'd be more complicated than that, so it takes a little more time to unwind it. And more complicated still might be anything which was subject to an actual vote by Congress, either in terms of appropriations or in terms of substantive decisions about policy. Those would necessarily then have to go to Congress to be retrofitted the other way. So I think there are three different baskets. The greater majority of those decisions fall, I believe, into that first basket. Simply, we don't agree with the decision, we're going to change it, and here's how we're going to change it. The Western Sahara one is interesting because it was a presidential decision. There was no treaty involved. There was no congressional action. But it became, it's interwoven with a larger Mideast peace process. And so anybody who attempts to change that at least has to take notice of the fact that it's connected to a whole series of other decisions. So that one, I think, is, although on the face of it, it should be very straightforward. Morocco, we changed our minds. It has other implications throughout the region. So that one, I'm not quite sure how long that would take if they would in fact do it. The World Health one, the Paris Climate Accord, even the Iran nuclear accord, that was not subject to Congress, but to some degree that would be subject to the determinations and intentions of the people in Iran. It isn't simply an American decision at this point.
Eunice, a good question. Thank you for asking it. And Brooke Spector, as always, thank you very much for your insights. U.S. foreign policy expert and associate editor at the Daily Maverick.